Welcome, everyone, to another edition of No Filter Sports. It is Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, and Bob Page. Got a lot to do in the show today, including an interview with one of these guys Denny hangs out with at card shows, Rudy.
Rudy.
Rudy, movie fame.
It's an honor for sure, and being on with Mr. McClain is really awesome.
Well, thank you very much, Rudy. You read that exactly the way you were supposed to, Rudy.
That's right. I want to talk about that in a minute.
Before That's it. It's not Rudy Giuliani. We should let people know either.
No.
Rudy Ruttinger. As I say, Ruttinger.
I think it's with a G.
Ruttinger.
One of the reasons that I want to talk to Rudy is because I said on the last show, all we seem to do is Michigan State stuff. We got huge numbers of Notre Dame fans listening to us. We're going to do a little bit of preview of Notre Dame football this year as well with Rudy.
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
Well, I never saw the movie because I don't watch corny cliche sports movies.
Oh, stop it.
The corny cliche sports movie. I'm doing some research.
I don't either. I mean,
in fairness, Denny does a lot of card shows around the country, and you run into a lot of characters who sign stuff.
Yeah.
So Rudy's a guy that you ran into. So I'm thinking offhand, well, you know, this is a movie. He's probably a pretty bright guy. He's made a great career out of this. So I get a little deeper into it. I'm not going to watch the movie. It's a big exaggeration. It's just a cliche form. Roger Ebert wrote a nice interview when it came out, and not an interview, review when it came out in 1993. Goes, underdog movies are a durable genre, never go out of style. They're fairly predictable. Few movie underdogs ever lose in the big last scene. The notion is enormously appealing over because everybody can identify one way or the other. Well, here's a kid who comes from a working class family in Illinois. Allegedly everybody tells him he can't succeed, he can't do anything. So it's a story of overcoming, and he wants to play for Notre Dame, and he's got to go to a junior college and study up. He gets the crap beat out of him for 4 years in the practice squad. And kind of as a gag, they let him in at the end. Dan Devine, the coach, does. He plays 27 seconds in a high school career. So then I go, okay, and I'm sorry, a college career.
College.
So I go look him up, and I look at a motivational speech because he's a motivational speaker.
Right.
And I've studied a lot of motivational speakers. And I go, this guy really isn't that bright. Now, I'm going to be fair with him when he comes up.
Be nice.
I'm going to be nice. And I hope I don't come off as
a... Don't you dare throw a spear.
I hope I don't come off as a phony. But I'm telling you up front, the guy was a good high school football player. He couldn't play D1 ball. He got the crap kicked out of him. Okay, he had perseverance and all that. The fact that he got into Notre Dame is the most impressive thing. But his motivational speech is very mediocre, very cliche written. And I was not inspired. And I've studied lots of motivational speakers. And
the
guy's a novelty. He's a novelty item.
Enough. A message.
Enough.
A message, if I may, to our producer.
Time out.
Brandon McAfee.
We're not enough. Hold on.
Something to say.
Go
Brandon,
ahead.
I want you now to make a dub of what Eli just said, and we're going to play that as soon as Rudy gets on the phone so he can hear what Eli just said.
No, you're not going to do that.
Absolutely
Why
not.
Why? Absolutely not going
to
do that.
You don't have guts enough to say
I
that
said,
to his face?
I said it to Rudy. No, because I'm going to respect him. When he comes out, I'm going to respect him.
Well, it's already on the show, though. I don't have any problem with what you said.
I'm told. Just tell him.
Person to person.
I am told his agent listens to the show.
Okay? That's okay.
So he will convey to Rudy what you just said. I'm sure he will, unless he doesn't want to hurt his feelings.
That's fine.
But Rudy is hardly a motivational speaker. Rudy is more of an entertaining type speaker. Tells a lot of stories. He keeps people laughing. He is the guy that everybody pulls for because of the nature of the movie.
Right.
So that's what Rudy's all about. He's not going to go out there and save lives with what he does, but he is going to go out there and entertain, and he entertains well. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, Eli, he's made a fortune getting on that band.
That's the American way.
The American way.
I give him credit for that.
Not only does he travel throughout the United States, they send him all over the world.
Now, the big thing I'll give him credit for is when he got out of college, it took him 10 years to get the movie produced.
Right.
And he worked and worked and worked to get that done. But, you know, the movie is a gross exaggeration. His father, Ned Beatty, most famous for what happened to him in Deliverance, very unpleasant situation
this
in there.
This is
listen, I'm just saying that's an exaggeration. So it's a cliche Hollywood sports. That's why I don't watch.
Nothing to do with Deliverance.
It's the Bad News Bears.
We're going to have Rudy on later.
That's fine. Anyway, we'll talk.
And
to Rudy
you now. And I both know how difficult it is to get a movie made.
I understand that. Okay. I understand. But, you know, but if your speech is, which is speech is, to follow your dreams, don't let people interfere with them and tell them what you can't do. If your dream is to get the crap kicked out of you for 4 years on a scout team and then struggle to make a movie where you can cash in, then I suppose so. But for, to play 27 seconds in football in a meaningless end of a game isn't anything to strive for in particular.
You missed the point. He had an overwhelming desire to be a part of Notre Dame. That's what he wanted. Mm-hmm. Whether he had on a football team or not, whether he went anywhere else was not important. He just wanted to be a Notre Dame alumnus. That's all. That's all he wanted. And he got what he wanted. He not only did he get what he wanted, but he even got 27 seconds
playing. And if he hadn't gotten the movie made, he would have gone back to Joliet. Probably maybe. worked, maybe got a job selling insurance or something. Maybe. So the fact that he got the movie made, which is an exaggeration that Joe Montana and all said is a gross exaggeration about the players weren't going to play the last game if he didn't get in. You know, I got the impression of him getting the one play was kind of like a few years ago, the Nebraska team had a poor kid was dying of cancer. They had a practice. Yeah. They let him get on the field and run through everybody. It was a big moment in his life. That's what Rudy was. They let him play. And by the way, the sack that he made. Didn't really make the sack. It was a guy named Jay Ankerhoff actually made the sack. Regardless, it's all part of the allegory.
You guys, the two of you guys have just blown the entire first segment of our program about this.
Okay. No, I'm done talking about
it. Please.
I'm going to be respectful, and you know what? Hopefully I changed my mind, and I think he's an absolute...
he's a hell of a guy.
Hell of a guy.
Let's go to JV.
Let's go to JV. So anyway, I tell you what's. Let's start with the gambling aspect. Okay, this game was notorious because it was going to be the biggest upset or the biggest betting line in the last 15 years. The fact that the Astros were so expected to beat the Tigers that one of the bets in Vegas, a $63,000 bet to win $11,000 at Houston -575. Denny, you understand a little bit about gambling, a little bit. A good baseball team wins 100 games and loses 60.
Right.
So you win 5 and you lose 3. That's a great baseball team. At the most, against an average team, it should be 2-1. To have it be 5-1 is just a great bet to take the Tigers. And Brandon, our producer, because we got a new sponsor coming in, mybookie.com, he could have bet $200 on the Tigers and won 800 or 900. It's an obvious bet, and I can't believe people are stupid enough to bet on the Astros when it's a baseball game and anybody can win.
But he didn't. Brandon didn't because he probably needs some Prevagen to work his brain a little because he forgot to hit the button. He forgot to hit enter.
No guts, no glory. And Eli, I think that was a relatively weak cliche you just used. It's a baseball game. So I'm going to give you guys a multiple choice.
Why is that a weak cliche? No, no. I gave evidence.
It's a baseball game. Anybody can win.
Time out. It's right.
I'm going to give you guys any one of these three. You can choose. It's just one of 162.
Okay.
You can choose that's why they play the games, or you can choose even a blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while. So pick one of those.
And that's what happened. The acorn found
all of those.
You're going to pick all of those above. Everything. The squirrel found an acorn. A pig found a piece of corn. I mean,
it was
You know what it is?
It's for a smart gambler, and I consider myself a smart gambler because I don't gamble.
Because you don't gamble.
If I had a bookie and I could, and I know how to do it now with mybookie.com when they come on, and I could have made a bet, I'd have made a bet because if you do 10 of those, you're going to come out ahead because there's no way a baseball team should be 5-1 odds over any other team.
And sure enough,
Tigers win the game 2-1.
When they pitched a terrific game.
Yeah, that's the hell
of
it.
Yeah.
Both teams pitched a hell of a game. I mean, you know, we used four guys, they used one. But the bottom line is Verlander was as good as he's ever been last night. He makes two real bad mistakes, and both of them wind up in the seat. So
he did pitch a couple no-hitters, not as good as he's ever been.
But he didn't throw a no-hitter. I saw people online before the ball game. Verlander tonight guaranteed no-hitter. Other people saying, no-hitter tonight, watch. And when he went through the first three or four innings without giving up a hit, the whole no-hitter's on the way. Well, all of a sudden, bing, bing, bing.
Jack Morris, unlike Rod and Mario, I'm not saying that this team is better than Rod Mario. I don't believe they are. But Jack Morris is not superstitious. He said he's perfect after every inning. He said, good for you, Jack. Let us know what's happening instead of pretending like you can jinx the game. Sure enough, as soon as he said he was perfect.
Oh, Eli, most guys do that.
You think so?
Because our guys
wouldn't get near it. And on radio, they won't talk about it either.
But the thing that disturbed me, I was starting to say a minute ago, was what happened after the game. Apparently, I mean, when you consider the soft nature of the Detroit media, except for this show and the kid on WX or whatever, it's 97.1 Valenti. A Detroit Free Press reporter, they didn't even name him. I'm not sure who it was. Tried to get into the Astros locker room last night. Not only was he barred by Justin Verlander personally, but the Astros stationed three guards outside the Houston locker room to keep this Free Press reporter out in violation of MLB rules. Now, if you don't want to speak, if you don't want to speak to a reporter, that's your business. But you can't ban him from the locker room, because if you start to ban one guy, then let's ban that other guy, because I don't like that guy either. Bob, you can't this, and I hope the Astros get in trouble.
Yeah. Bob, the guy's name is Anthony Finnich.
He
was the guy banned. The other thing, too, is there's going to be a hefty, serious fine for doing what they did last night. I think it's $50,000, although with Justin's money, $50,000 is a chump change. But you know what? It makes no sense. You can't keep him out of the locker room to begin with. All it does is create more hassle and chaos in your life. Now you're going to – listen, I know what it is to get a letter from the commissioner. It's a serious thing, even if you're making $35 million a year. And it's just – it's so unprofessional to bar somebody from the locker room.
I can't imagine. And Verlander's a pretty reasonable, bright guy.
He's always seemed like a nice guy, and he's good with the media.
What could the Freep have done? What could they have said?
I read the Detroit Free Press sports section every morning of my life. I don't remember anything.
Yeah,
I just believe – Eli and I were talking about it before we went on, and I just think it's something to do with his wife. I don't know if I'm vaguely recalling something or you know,
it could be because I think he's got a thick enough skin that if they talk about him as a baseball player without taking a cheap shot, he can take whatever criticism there is.
But there will be an apology coming from JV. I guarantee it'll come out today after he thinks better of it. He was obviously frustrated as hell on Wednesday night after losing to the Tigers in this game. He'll come out and say something.
And the Astros had no choice but to do it. They know what they're going to get fined. It's against baseball rules, but you know, they're going to listen to Justin Verlander and then clean up the mess afterwards.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like the director of communications knew about the blockage of the clubhouse either, because as soon as he found out about it, they went and got that writer and allowed him in the clubhouse. But the press conference was already over.
Yeah, right. Once Verlander was done, they let him in.
And by the way, the writer walked up to Justin and said, "I'd just like to ask you two questions," and Justin walked away. He says, "I got nothing to say to you."
He's got the right to do that if he wants to.
Not in that clubhouse, he doesn't. Not in that clubhouse, he doesn't.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Nope,
if a guy doesn't want to talk to a reporter wherever he is, he has the right not to speak
to
a reporter.
That's okay.
Watch how long that'll happen. $50,000 may not sound like a lot
ever again. You haven't been in a clubhouse in a while. You can go around a
club. Last week.
Listen, after a team loses, you can try 10 players that'll say no. I told you the story from about 5 years ago where Torrey Hunter finally said, "Well, somebody please talk to the media," because they're all turning everybody down in the midst of an awful season, and they have that right. But
they didn't kick him out of the
– No, you can't kick him out. No, that's a whole different thing.
I went nuts here in New York on television a number of years ago about some guy who covers the New York Giants, a beat reporter from one of the New Jersey papers. They're waiting for Lawrence Taylor to come out after a practice, a little gaggle of media. And LT comes out and says to all the reporters, "I'm not talking to you guys today. I got no comment." And he starts to walk away. And this Jersey reporter actually says to Lawrence Taylor, "Well, then bleep you, LT."
Ooh.
And he did not say bleep. I went nuts on this guy. Lawrence Taylor, Danny McClain, or any other famous sports figure doesn't have the right to say to reporters, "I have no comment."
No, there are times. Listen, there are times when we all don't feel well and something's happened that we don't have time and things like that. But to come into that clubhouse and the guy's doing his business, actually doing his business, covering the game, that what he's being paid to do, I just think it's really unprofessional not to not cooperate.
Or say, "Let me go take a shower. I'll come back later."
I'll be back in
20 minutes. That's why they do have a 10-minute cooling off period in all the leagues after every game, to say to the players, if you had a rough game and you don't want to talk to anybody, then leave the building. But otherwise, cool off and do your job.
Let's talk
about a long time ago. I was in the Milwaukee Brewers dressing room at Tiger Stadium, and I went in after a game, and I thought I'd never met him before, to do an interview with the great – he was a great player, and he's from Detroit, Southfield's own Ted Simmons.
Sure.
I walked up to Ted Simmons. I introduced myself and told him I wanted to do an interview. He looks at me like I had the bubonic plague.
He was that
and
way,
says,
yeah.
And says, I don't talk to the media.
Well, look at the other guy that never talked to the media, and everybody knew it, although he didn't keep him out of the clubhouse, was Carlton. And Carlton was just plain-ass nasty.
Fisk. And you know when he did, Denny? Do you know when he did?
After he hit his big home run.
When and where?
I'm talking about Carlton.
Press box. What's
Carlton
that?
Or Simmons you're talking about?
I'm talking Carlton.
Right.
I'm in the press box one night in Detroit years ago. They're playing the White Sox, and all of a sudden, the Tigers PR people came in, and they told a group of us, Carlton will meet with the media tonight. And we said, what? What? So they set up a card table right on the first baseline, and the lights were beginning to dim on the field. It was so long after the game. Here comes Steve Carlton. I got my microphone, stick it in front of him. There were about four or five other guys, and Steve Carlton did a really nice interview with us. I have no idea why, but that's how he entered the Suns.
Well, I think a guy reaches a career, a plateau in a career that he all of a sudden starts thinking about, especially if he was a star like Carlton, starts thinking a little bit about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah.
I need those votes to get into the Hall of Fame. And
Reggie
was
the worst. That jerk off.
Yeah, but
Reggie
let me
Jackson
finish about Carlton.
He would always talk to the writers, but told the broadcaster, right. Screw you,
I
get out of here.
Headache. One thing about Carlton, all of a sudden, you know, we see him at a lot of card shows also. And Carlton does pressers now with people at card shows. That's how far he's come.
Meanwhile, you've been talking about Carlton Fisk briefly, right? And he's talking about Steve Carlton. So which Carlton are we talking about?
You're talking about Steve Carlton, right?
I never mentioned Carlton Fisk.
Okay, well, you said the White Sox. Did Steve Carlton ever pitch for the White Sox?
Hell yeah, at the very end of his career.
At the very end of his career.
By the way, just another quick thing about that. I'll never forget reading in one of the sports magazines about 20 years ago, some guy got in touch with Carlton who lived in a geodesic dome built into the side of a mountain in the wilds of Colorado. He says, Steve, I want to come out and do a feature with you. Carlton says, sure, I'll make dinner for you. I said, wow, so I'm going to have dinner with Steve Carlton at his house. He gets out there, and Carlton says to him, he says, hey, a hamburger's okay with you tonight? Guy says, Steve, you're the ultimate vegetarian. You're the guy who said, I would never, ever eat meat. So Carlton said, I was. But what happened was every time I was making a salad and I took my knife and I chopped a carrot or put it in the lettuce, I actually heard the carrot scream in agony.
Oh, geez, enough of that.
I heard the lettuce scream in pain.
Oh, please.
So I said, what the hell? I'll start eating everything now.
Jeez. Now, let's talk about something just for a second.
After a break.
Oh, my
God. I want to talk about home runs. I want to talk about you and your home runs.
I said, you blew the whole first segment on
we
that
did not
20
blow
minute
the
thing.
Shut up.
Shut up. Zip it for a minute, please. I want to talk a little bit more on JV, but first, hey.
I think he dosed up this morning.
Michigan's most experienced ophthalmologist, Dr. Yalda, began performing LASIK surgery about 20 years ago. Now, in 2019, he's got 30,000 satisfied patients. Most of them get better than 20/20 vision. Imagine that. Get to throw away your glasses, your contacts, those poor-performing technologies that cause distortion, and you can't see better. You can see so much better, with LASIK. 20/15 vision or better. I had that when I got it back in 2000. It's about quality of life, and that's why 600,000 Americans get LASIK every year. Also, he performs these multifocal lens exchanges for people who need reading glasses at 45+. That goes along with 20/20 or better far vision. You should just get a free evaluation. These procedures take a couple of minutes. They are as safe as anything in medicine and painless, and throw all that old technology in the garbage. Get a free evaluation. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Dr. Yaldo for perfect vision.
Wouldn't today be a great day to go to Dr. Yaldo, you and me holding hands?
I have a meeting afterwards.
Oh, yes, you do. That's right. Dr. Yaldo. You got to get to that meeting. All right. Now, folks, now for another Red Shovel Network sponsor, David Hall and Hall Financial. If you are thinking about refinancing your home, Hall Financial would love to save you lots of money. You can email David at dhall@hallfg.com or call Hall Financial at 248-308-5000. Maybe it's your first home or your dream home. Maybe you want to take money out of your home. Give David Hall a chance and get lower rates, better options, and more personal attention.
Industry average, by the way, for a refi is 44 days. But Hall Financial average is only 19 days. By the way, Eli's doing this.
Right, refi.
Take it from all the customers, including Eli. They have over 750 five-star reviews. They will fight for you, even if you have a dent or a car crash in your history. Now, Eli doesn't have any dents or car crashes.
No, I get perfect credit.
Absolutely. Email at dhall@hallfg.com. That's dhall@hallfg.com. Or call 248-308-5000 and tell them No Filter sent you. That's Denny, Eli, and Big Bob Page in NY.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. By the way,
okay, now I got something to add here. It's not time for the mailbag yet. But, you know, I heard from David Hall this week, and not our sponsor. I heard from the former Michigan quarterback, David Hall, through Twitter. I heard from Jeff Cohen, too. Two guys who could have been stars had they gone to lower levels, you know, Central Michigan, the MAC, to
play. What'd they have to say?
Just so you know, Dave, Jeff, of course, has never left Detroit. David's living in Denver. Great career out there, a successful executive. He says, Bob, what a run you had or now have again. I always liked how you and Eli told it like you guys saw it instead of just reading scores and directly quoting coaches. Glad you two are both having fun. Thank you, David. I think Denny's having fun, too.
I think you ever met David Hall. That's interesting. Nice.
Sounds like he listened to you on the radio and watched you on TV.
Jeff Cohen's
I'll tell you one thing. Bob
there.
Can really write a letter.
let's go back for a moment to
home
Justin.
Runs.
Do you no, well? Okay, he gave up 32 home runs, which is a lot
so far.
Having an amazing season, by the way. He's 15-5 now. He was 15-4 going in. Actually, with 2 runs in 9 innings, his ERA is a little lower than 2.81. But that's how amazing he has been. Strikeout to walk ratio tremendous, 10 strikeouts a game. But he has got a lot of home runs. I think a lot of good pitchers give up a lot of home runs. Jack Morris mentioned Bert Blyleven gave up 50. He used to give up a lot of home runs too, even in very good years.
I got like a 6-year run in 65, my first full year. I gave up 25 in 66, despite the fact I win 20. I gave up 42 in 67. I won 17 and gave up 35. 68, I gave up 31.
Were those league-leading figures or up near the top?
42 was league-leading.
Okay.
But the rest weren't. I was always close. And then 69, 25, and 71 with the Washington Senators.
You prepared for this question.
I could have given up 95 in Washington, but I only gave up 31. It was.
You know, Denny, I was thinking about this, ironically, just the other day, and I came up with a question I wanted to ask you. When you give up a home run like this, especially if it's on the road and there are 50,000 people, are you embarrassed? Is it a weird feeling to watch a guy run around the bases behind you, or you just don't think about it and move on?
No, you don't think about it. It's just part of the game. It's just somebody else. You know, as long as this thing doesn't beat you, you don't want to get beat, and you never want to get beat by the biggest guy on the team.
You're allowed to make a mistake and something.
You make mistakes. Listen, if the game wasn't full of mistakes, we'd have 0-0 for the rest of our lives, and that'd be no fun.
Now, here's what's interesting. Go ahead, Brandon. What?
Well, according to baseballreference.com, you did lead the league in 66, 67, and 68.
Oh, really?
That's pretty good. Three years in a row, I led.
Huh.
Did I really?
Yes. Now, 42, 35, and 31.
Like Verlander, you pitched a lot of innings, so that's going to lead to more home runs. But So Verlander pitches a complete game. All right. Now, Daniel Norris was shut down after 3 innings. True, Norris is recovering from some injuries last year. He had a groin and pelvic surgery. So they watch his every pitch. Even though he feels great, they're watching every pitch. They shut down Casey Mize yesterday in the minor league.
Yeah.
So also this week, it ties in. I'm reading an obit, Little Al Jackson. Pitch for the Mets. Now, in 1962, I was 12 years old living on Long Island, and the Mets came into existence, and I fell in love with the Mets because my family was a National League fans. We were Yankee haters and loved the Mets. And so they were 40-120, which is the worst record in baseball history, but they were beloved. People loved the Mets. They were these pathetic losers, but they were our guys. And
they were the Cubs.
And so Little Al Jackson, though, who Casey Stengel called very artistic. He was a bright spot in the 4-20 team. But here's a story. On August 14th, 1962, at the Polo Grounds, Little Al Jackson, I thought of this last night, the contrast of Mize and Norris, went all 15 innings against the Phillies, threw 215 pitches, gave up six hits but lost 3-1 when the Phillies rallied for a pair of runs after a two-base error by Marv Thornberry, Marvelous Marv. Known for being just a bad player.
Did you ever have a game like that?
Yes, he did.
Sure did.
He threw 226 pitches against the Orioles in 1966. But here's the point.
That was the second or third game I pitched in a big league.
So they're watching, which is just the way the game has changed. I'm not saying good or bad, but the shit change is shocking. And little Al Jackson, 5'10", 165, pitched for a long time.
Sure did.
In fact, he came back and won a World Series ring with the 67 Cardinals.
He had a good breaking ball, by the way. Really had a good breaking ball.
And you know who reminded you of Bobby Shantz, and I bet Bobby Shantz had an awful lot of games where he pitched that many innings.
You're absolutely right, Bobby. I just saw Bobby Shantz.
Really?
Believe it or not, Bobby Shantz is still around doing card shows.
I'll be darned. That's great.
You know what,
now, Eli, this is a great segue.
Hold on a second. Before you put Bobby Shantz away, your friend, whose name I've never mentioned, but I will in this case, Ron Cameron, who both of you did a show with, mentioned to me once at a Tiger game, and he said, Bobby Shantz won the MVP and the Cy Young Award in 1952. I said, Ron, you're wrong. You're wrong.
I don't think so.
You're wrong. He says, no, I'm right. I said, I'll prove it to you. How much you want to bet? They didn't come up with the Cy Young until 1956.
Right.
Don Newcomb was the first one to win in 56, so Shantz won the MVP.
And they only had one, until later they decided they'd have two Cy Youngs, one for the American League, one for the National.
Yeah.
Eli, what I was going to say is, this is such a perfect segue you unknowingly provided me, talking about the Mets, the Tigers, and left-handed pitchers. So the Mets, the other night...
Can I have a timeout here a second?
What?
Just for one
can
second.
I finish,
before,
please?
I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you go on forever.
What?
Thank you.
We mentioned very lightly Mize. They shut him down.
Yeah.
There's no reason to shut him down. None whatsoever. Let him come up to the big leagues. Let him pitch a couple times. Once, twice, three times. Let him get a taste for it. Let him get hungry for it. Bottom line is, you don't shut down a 20, 21-year-old kid just as on the cusp of coming to the big leagues. You just don't.
I don't disagree.
That's how bad this damn organization is going.
Danny, this is part of the segue. You added
to the
segue. So I want to talk about this.
Okay, Bob.
Continuing.
The Mets are playing the Cleveland Indians. Mets have just gone ahead on a two-run homer by Michael Conforto, 4-2 in the bottom of the sixth. Now, unfortunately, the Indians get two guys on to start the seventh inning. They're worried. They bring in Justin Wilson from the bullpen. Does that name ring a bell with you
guys?
Yes. Justin Wilson then strikes out the next two guys to end the inning on seven pitches, nothing but cut fastballs. He's now 3-1, 2.39. Avila traded his own son and Justin Wilson, the only quality lefty the Tigers had in their bullpen, to the Cubs for a third baseman they did not need named Jamer Candelario. And you know he hasn't even proven he can play yet. Jamer Candelario, if you will. He's on that Toledo-Detroit shuffle, and they got Isaac Paredes, who may turn out to be a prospect. Meanwhile, another mush softball for your guys. The guy Avila felt so desperately was needed to be replaced at third, Nick Castellanos, was just given away by Avila.
He had another eight digger last night.
He's torn it up. On Tuesday, Nick makes an appearance on a Chicago TV and radio sports talk show. The host airs a lengthy soundbite with his manager, Joe Madden, extolling Nick's virtues in the most flattering terms possible. And when it was finished, Nick started to cry on the set of that show.
Oh, please.
What the hell? Danny, this guy said the most flattering, Joe Madden, most flattering things you've ever seen. And one of the things he said was Nick insists upon playing all the time. And he said to Madden, don't take me out, Skip. I want to get another A, B, C, if I can get another hit on the way to 3,000. That's a quote, Nick told him. Nick thinks he's going to get 3,000 hits in the big leagues, and he might be.
Well, he's playing great.
Well, last night he went 4-for-5, and that's a good step towards 3,000.
Which is interesting, okay? Here's another segue. Thank you for that unwitting segue, Bob. Sometimes you do things you don't even expect to. That's how brilliant you are. Point is that, you know, Justin Verlander was here in 2017. He was traded 2 years ago, by the way. And the thought was, and I'm thinking of this Nick, who's, you know, kind of devolved into a good but not a great player, gets out of here, he's a great player. There was talk in 17 that Verlander may not have had enough to make the Hall of Fame. If he continued at this rate with this team, he wouldn't have made the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And so now, of course, there's no doubt about it. He's proven his greatness. This is the same thing, Cass. So sometimes it can be contagious when you're in a toxic situation. And I think the same of Miguel Cabrera. He's in a toxic situation, right? He may be too hurt to ever play again. If I'm Miguel Cabrera, I say, please, I'm going to take 6 months or a year off. send me to a good team, let me resurrect my career, help somebody, be of use instead of just somebody helping us to 42 instead of 40 wins on the year. Yeah. And so sometimes you really do need a change of scenery.
Yeah, it really can't hurt to kick yourself in the butt with a new organization, a new direction, and get on the right plane once in a while.
No, because
once you sit there and languish and continue to languish in just ridiculousness, the way we play the game here in Detroit right now, you become a part of that languishness. I mean, you don't
languishness. Wow,
and you really—he's
creating language as we sit here.
And you don't want to play. You really don't want to play.
I think it's languishosity, isn't it, Bob?
No, anyway, it's languishness.
Let me tell you something. Casey Stengel had nothing on Danny McClain. That's all I got to say.
You know, you guys are.
How about Dizzy Dean? He's slotting to third.
Brandon, if they didn't have Danny, what the hell would they have?
Anyway, this is funny. Now, I know, Bob, you're going to do the mailbag. We can do it after this next break. But here's something from a listener named John James. He goes, no filter sports drinking game. Take a drink every time you can hear "Let Me Finish," which Denny had to correctly say to you, "Let Me Finish," when you interrupted him. So he's very omniscient, this guy.
I said that to Denny. He interrupted me.
You both said it to each other. Now, this guy, he writes, "Denny's inconsistency drives me crazy. Every week he bemoans that players don't stay in the minor leagues long enough to have learned the fundamentals. Then he says, bring the kids up, as in mice." So,
I didn't say bring them up. I said bring the two guys up who are supposed to be the saviors for the organization. Those are the only two guys I want to see up here.
Okay.
There hasn't been anybody else that qualified to be a major league player. Oh, no, wait. The kid who hit the home run again last night, he's starting to look pretty good. Rodriguez, is it?
Yeah, Ronnie Rodriguez. I like him.
He looks pretty good.
Anyway.
Now, still another unwitting segue that Eli's just thrown me, and this is going to be great because I got more and more softballs for Denny to hit out. Big story in baseball this week. Big story. Where the ex-Major League Baseball stars are ripping the current game. Goose Gossage, I can't watch these games anymore. It's not baseball. It's unwatchable. No strategy. The beauty of the game, it's all gone.
No
it's like
strategy.
A video game. It's home run derby with their bleeping launch angle every night. Lou Piniella, all anybody wants to do is launch the ball. Making the ballpark smaller, all we're seeing is home runs, no hit and runs, no stolen bases, nothing. I managed 3,400 games in the big leagues, and never once did I put on a full shift on anybody, not once. And I think I won a few games without
that.
Said Pete Rose, it's a home run derby every night. And if that's what they want, that's what they're going to get. This is not a good thing.
Well, Denny, do they still manufacture? I mean, manufacturing a run, like when I was a kid, Maury Wills, you know, you walk, you steal second, little sacrifice bunt gets you to third, sack fly scores you, you get a run, you strategize. It's true. And back then we used to laugh at Earl Weaver in the 80s, who said, the hell with all that. Three-run homers win games.
Yeah, that's what
he said.
Yeah,
that's what
I think our club.
I got one final quote I want to read to you guys on this.
That wasn't a question.
That was a mush softball he's supposed to answer. No.
It's a mush softball because I know how you feel about the game, but I want you to hear this quote first, and then you can comment.
Let him finish, Denny.
Listen to this carefully, guys. You ready? Quote. Most players do not learn the fundamentals. Most of them don't practice. They don't even train. The sole object encouraged by the lively ball in the short is to hit home runs. Home runs lost its thrill. The so-called strategy of the modern managers loses more games than it wins.
Who's saying this?
All it does is slow up the game to the point a spectator doesn't even know what time to go to dinner or bed.
Who's saying this, Mamie Van Doren?
That was from the March 17th edition of Life magazine in 1952.
Ooh.
The title of it was "The Greatest Player of All Time Says They Don't Play Baseball Anymore."
And who was that? Tyga.
Wow. Speaking of
the current generation.
In 1972, I believe it was, they the American League brought on the designated hitter.
Right.
And which took all the double switch and all that out of it. And your old teammate Dick Trusewski at the time, we love Trixie. I believe he's still alive. One of Sparky's good buddies.
He's living over in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Great guy.
I love
great.
Trixie. Yeah. Plus, he was a coach under Sparky.
Koufax's roommate.
Oh, that's right. He said the designated hitter. He said there's no strategy left in baseball. He goes, a wooden Indian could manage in the American League.
Okay, Danny, go ahead now. Rip the current game of baseball.
I don't rip the game of baseball. I love the game. The game has given me everything I have, good, bad, and indifferent.
He wouldn't say anything bad about anybody, even Rudy.
You like all the home runs and everything. By the way,
you know, listen, God, what is this guy on this morning? Can you believe this? The two of you. I'm drinking Red Bull, and you guys are killing me.
Let me tell you what excites me, okay?
Red Bull.
I want to tell you what excites me. What? My new Nautilus. From Starlink.
Oh, you got to
love
kidding.
This car.
Such a good looking car. And I'll tell you what else excites you. That money from David Hall.
Well, I'm getting a new refi. He's getting money from me. Anyway, I've had all kinds of cars. Cadillacs, Fords, Oldsmobiles, Hondas, you name it, Buicks. But I love this. I love my Lincolns. I've had six or seven of them in a row now, mostly the MKZ, the sedan. But now I'm into the SUVs, and this Nautilus is fascinating. A great features, safety features. It's got all kinds of cross-traffic features. It protects you from getting into accidents when you're not paying attention. It's got a great sound system with Revel Audio. And I just like Starlink. I've known these guys for decades and decades. Knew Hoot, know his son Jim, know his grandson Ryan, work with these guys and always get my cars there. Well, what you can do is you can get your new Lincoln at home with what's called the effortless ownership experience. If you don't want to necessarily go to the gorgeous remodeled showroom at Starlink, go to starlink.com, order your model. The features, the color, then just roll in the Star and pick it up. It's all part of the Star treatment. So at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. It's at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth
Management. My man, Luke.
He's our man, Luke. In fact, Brandon is going to go see him about setting up his retirement plans. We make sure that little baby of his has got a good college education and can
The kid's 35 years old.
He's a kid.
He's going over to see Luke already. That's the pull of Luke Nowacki.
Well, you got to start. You should start the stuff.
Brandon Smart for doing that. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, call Luke at 248-663-4748. He's got hundreds of clients because he serves them and serves them well. He answers all your financial questions. He creates a plan to help you reach your financial goals. Consultation is complimentary. Hey, retirement may be fast approaching as it is for – actually, we're all three of us are retired. I was going to say for the three of us. Brandon's still 30 years away, but he's got a lot of work to do before then. And if you are, if retirement is sneaking up on you, definitely you got to be prepared for it, for all those obligations you're going to have. So why don't you call Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748. Pinnacle Wealth Management is the company, and Securities Investment Advisory Associates, Advisory Services Office of Royal Alliance Associates, member FINRA SIPC. It is a separately owned and other entities, and our marketing names, products, and services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. Luke Nowacki, 248-663-4748. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, one of the things that Brandon, I hope, never learns, and Denny didn't learn either, unlike Eli and yours truly, Luke can also help you if you lose half of everything you got in your divorce. I know he can.
All right. So you want to do the mailbag now?
Can I mention one other thing about this Ty Cobb thing from 1952? He ripped virtually every individual player in baseball. He said the only guys he liked, he thought Feller would have been a star in his day as well, and he loved the way Phil Rizzuto played the game. He said that Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio, quote, play on one cylinder, and they would never have gotten to the top of baseball in my day. And I know this is going to shock you. Cobb ripped all the black players, especially Jackie Robinson.
He was a racist, 100% racist.
What did he say?
Of course he was. That's why I mentioned that. He said, they may be fast, but they don't know how to run the bases.
Yeah, oh, jeez. I mean, the jealousy contained in that statement you just made is
like Al Campana says,
flying off the pages.
They lack the necessities.
Yeah.
They're not buoyant.
I mean, Ty Cobb was hardly the pillar of much, you know, and you could just grab his book and read one page after another. It's filled with hate and prejudice. And, you know, he may have been a hell of a player, and the game needed a Ty Cobb at that point in time to keep the game moving. But, man, the things that he espoused and talked about all the time were just miserable.
And not a very
But, Denny, remember the point that I was trying to make with that. Every generation rips what's going on now in the game of, and not just baseball, hockey, basketball, football, whatever.
You know, I've been lucky. I had a great father-in-law by the name of Lou Boudreau, a Hall of Famer in more ways than one. And I can tell you what he said about Ty Cobb. He said one conversation with Ty Cobb was enough for the rest of your life. He absolutely went into his prejudice and racism within minutes, Lou said. He says, I just had to get the hell out of that place before all of a sudden he's going to ordain you because you've sat there too long. Lou was really disappointed in him when he met him the first time.
an ugly, ugly man. I read the Al Stump biography many, many years ago. And, of course, I saw the movie. Tommy Lee Jones played Cobb. And just an ugly human being.
And Arliss played the reporter. What was his name again?
Robert Wool.
Robert Wool, yes, right. Yeah.
Great show. Great show that was.
Yes, it was. So, where you want to go from here? You want to do the Kershaw Koufax thing? You said.
I got a lot of football, obviously, too. That's going on.
Well, let's quickly get through this one. I thought it was kind of a reasonably big story that Koufax, Sandy Koufax, considered by many maybe the greatest lefty of all time, only won 166 games because he really only pitched from 63 to 66 effectively, and then he retired at age 30 with a circulation problem in his finger, and he also had some shoulder issues, and he thought he'd never be able to use his arm again. But Kershaw is, I guess, the closest lefty to him as a Dodger since. You won 130-some games, but Koufax won 166. He's in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, you're not.
And we both had, you know, major injuries. I mean, we both had to get out of the game. I mean, he got out with what he had, and I had to get out because, hell, I couldn't lift my arm at the end of my career.
Yeah.
But, listen.
I don't think Sandy could either. He came off a great season. His last season was
great.
He won
27 games his last year.
Sir.
Imagine that.
Yes, sir.
It's part of the game.
I'll just say this again. I've said this before. For 5 years, offensively and defensively, Don Mattingly was one of the greatest players who ever lived. He ain't never going to make the Hall of Fame. The whole thing is just, man, all these arguments who should be, who isn't, it's ridiculous.
Koufax was 97-27 with a 1.86 ERA from 63 to 66. And in his 57 career postseason innings, 0.95 ERA.
Played with a great ball club. That's got
sure
a lot
did.
To do
That's
with
true.
It.
That's true.
An awful lot to do with
the
it.
The Dodgers. Yeah. Willie Davis, Tommy Davis.
But he, Kershaw is a great story. He's quite a gentleman. He travels the world for a number of charities out there, including sex trafficking and what have you. He and his wife have been stalwarts when it comes to that. So you got to admire him for a number of reasons. But on top of everything else, boy, he can pitch. Mm-hmm. He's got one of the great – first of all, he's got a screwed-up windup. I don't know how the hell you follow it as a hitter. But on the other hand, he's got one of the greatest curveballs I've ever seen in my life because he throws it for a strike. It seems to me every time I see him pitch, he throws it 8 out of 10 times for a strike. And, boy, that's tough to throw, especially an overhand curveball.
Eli just mentioned one of the great names from the past, former batting champion Tommy Davis. This is 74 or 75. I'm a little bored sitting up at the press box at Tiger Stadium. He's closing out his career in the American League as a designated hitter. These guys didn't know what to do with themselves when they weren't hitting. What, are they going to go eat hot dogs and drink Coke in the locker room?
Well, Gates
I wonder if Tommy Davis is in the locker room. I go down to the visitors' clubhouse in the middle of the game. I walk in. There's the great Tommy Davis sitting by himself. Tommy introduced myself. Hey, I said, you want to do an interview with me right now? He said, what? I mean, here in the middle of the game? I said, yeah. He says, okay, sure. I got nothing else to do. So we did this interview. He was great. And that was what the DH was all about when they first came up with it. Guys didn't know what to do with themselves.
Brandon, you have his record there. There was one year, I remember, it was the early 60s. He had the most RBIs. The record is 190 of Hack Wilson.
Right.
He had like 100. How many did he have? Was it 150?
In 62, he had 153 RBIs, which led the league.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, he could hit.
Yeah, Willie Davis, he was the righty. Willie Davis was the lefty. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Wes Parker. Those are great teams. The pitching staff, Drysdale, Koufax, they played the Yankees every year in the World Series.
And you know who put that team together? Charlie Dressen.
Did he?
At one time, yeah. Dressen.
Thought it was Al Campana.
Dressen brought Sandy Koufax to the major leagues.
So Dressen, just as you people
by
know,
the way, Dressen brought Denny McClain to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I think
just as you people amazing. Know, just to change the subject here, if you're Eli Zarrett and Denny McClain, you've done very well for yourselves, and you have lovely homes, which they both do. Now, let's say Eli just bought his latest home recently. Denny's been living out there for a while in the exurbs of Detroit. If you wanted to renovate your homes, you two guys, what would be a reasonable amount of money to spend on that? Let's say, well, I'm going to spend $150,000 to drop on my new home to renovate. That's a lot of money, right?
Yeah, it depends on the house and how wealthy you are. So
what if you said to somebody, I'm going to renovate my house and spend $6 million on it?
That's a bit much.
That's just what, embarrassingly again, my alma mater, Michigan State, decided to spend to renovate Cowell's house, where the president of the university traditionally has lived. Oh. And this guy, President Stanley, is moving in, and he wants renovations done at his house, and State says, okay, $6 million we'll spend for you to renovate
that's
it.
That's disgusting. That's
it's unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
What's going on in East Lansing?
Well,
Mateen Cleaves has been exonerated, even though video shows him dragging a woman into his room, her physically, into a drunk woman into his room at the Knights Inn Hotel. He got acquitted. So,
and we got way too many pictures like that, too, in the last five or 10 years.
You don't know what really happened in the Mateen Cleaves day. Obviously, it's one of those he said, she said things. We'll never know. Only two people actually know about that. And yet still, this guy was the face of Michigan State basketball's 2000 national championship team under Tom Izzo. And everybody says he's a great guy. I'm sure you know him, Eli.
Yeah, I do.
I've met him before.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing after another with Michigan State.
Yeah.
One thing after another.
He was the Pistons' first round draft pick. I told you that story, right? Where Joe Dumars was the general manager and he had scouts all over. He had Tony Ronzoni and all these guys all over the world, going from Lithuania to Croatia to wherever, you know, France, looking at all these players. They scout hundreds of players and they draft a guy 75 miles away in East Lansing who was on TV every night. Anyway.
About the mailbag.
You want to do mailbag? Go ahead. Bob, mailbag?
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Then we're going to segue into that. I wish you guys would give me a little more preparation.
Because we got Rudy.
Of course, Brandon can always edit some of this stuff out, and we can,
but
which
we,
he does.
We are committed to talk to Rudy, right?
We are committed to talk to Rudy here.
yes, eventually, I think we're going to do
that. If you're not ready with the mailbag.
Oh, okay. So here is I'm actually ready now.
Go ahead.
Here again is my beloved Charles from our hometown of Grosse Pointe, Michigan. And among other things, Charles complains about now on our hotline. He says, the PR blue wall Michigan media machine is nothing new. Going on since Bo, Eli's part of it, and so is Bob with his I'm so embarrassed by my university. Calm down, Bobby. UM has a lot to be embarrassed about, namely zero trophies since 2004. Harbaugh does have the lone win under his belt. Team is still 1-9 against the top 10 since he took over. But Charles, when we talk about embarrassment, I'm not talking about sports at Michigan State. I'm not talking about one-loss records at Michigan State. I'm talking about everything else, and especially the Nassar case. So don't jump on me for being too hard on my alma mater, because it's been a disgrace.
I'm going to defend myself here, too. I don't drink the Michigan Kool-Aid. I say right up front what
you
they
don't.
Are.
You don't.
Not
I've never heard you drink
not
it.
Not at all. I don't drink that never. Kool-Aid. No, I think Harbaugh's under tremendous pressure because of all of his failures so far. You can't sugarcoat that stuff.
Needless to say, we had a lot of comments in the mailbag from all the Ron LaFleur stuff.
Really?
Chuck Monin, a.k.a. the pigskin preacher. Love the LaFleur stories. You got to tell some George Kell stories sometime. Believe me, we got more George Kell stories.
I don't really
than
have a lot of George Kell stories.
Brian Drake, friend of the show, writes, the LaFleur stories were the epitome of what the listeners love about your show. And then, friend of the show, Robert Helleneva, I think from the Lansing area, says, you know, just saying, I enjoy the show and I listen often. However, for me, it takes a sour note when Eli goes on about his smoking weed. To each his own, and I'm not going to rail against him, but I wager a lot of folks are not necessarily into it, including that guy right there, Danny McClain, even amateur weekend warrior athletes. I'm just saying that's what he's saying.
I thought about that a lot. Should I have told those stories? Let me tell you what my history is, okay, real fast, Danny. In high school,
just a limited version.
In high school, I didn't really like booze, and my friends all thought it was the greatest thing. At 16 years old, they were taking liquor from their parents' cabinet. They're drinking beer. So I was the designated driver. I didn't like to drink. I couldn't, that beer didn't do much. And so I would see these guys after, you know, on Saturday night. I drop them off at their house. They're puking on their front lawn, you know, because they're so drunk. Yeah. They can't handle the alcohol. I go to college, and the big thing in a fraternity house is they get so on Saturday. And so, you know, it was like this bag of puking out of your windows, acting like total idiots. I go, who wants this? Then I ran into this gentle little plant that made me feel good. And I watched all these idiots falling over their faces on alcohol. And I said, I like this better. But of course, over the next 50 years, I broke the law 20,000 times doing it because alcohol is, hey, it's great, let's drink and have some fun, and this was the devil's weed. So that's why I'm a little resentful at this point in my life, because I'm not an addict, and I don't have to have it all the time, but I spent many years of being kind of in the shadows while alcohol was glorified, and I didn't think it was a very attractive drug at all.
Well, now you've outlived it, in a sense, because it's now legal.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
I want to say,
of course, I would never have told
it.
These stories.
Right.
And if Bob hadn't said, because I didn't read his Wikipedia page, that LaFleur had a lot of problems, alcohol and drug related.
Right.
But so I shared a couple of stories, and I'm sorry.
But I want to say this, that Eli and I are from the exact same generation, and I smoked a lot of dope when I was in high school. We laughed and called the alky freaks. Since we were getting high, we called them getting low. And yes, who wants to get low, puking their guts out and stuff?
Okay.
I just didn't need it anymore.
You know,
I became a father
enough,
at an early
enough,
age. I stopped smoking dope.
Yeah,
Let's continue. Wait, hang on a minute. This isn't applicable to this show.
I just wanted to make a comment. I didn't expect him to follow it up, but go ahead.
I mean, you know, he's always going to come out with an epistle immediately after you say something.
The what?
An epistle.
That's what you do after you drink a lot, right?
That's what we do in a Catholic church.
You know, we got to put Brandon to work on this. We're going to post this somewhere. The 15 greatest malaprops ever used by Denny McLean on this program.
You best be careful. You best be careful now.
By the way, don't call weed dope unless you call alcohol dope, okay? I don't like the term.
I don't know. Why would you say that? Because that's what we called it in the 60s.
Who cares?
You know it.
Okay.
It was smoking dope.
That's as far back as you go with this, is to the 60s.
You're right.
All right. Good.
I told you why I quit.
Okay.
Did you have some fun with the mail pack?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, I'm a mailman, ironically enough, and I usually listen to the radio while I'm working, stumbled upon your show and love it. All three of you are entertaining. You raise great points, and even though I naturally disliked it at first, Bob's Mrs. Ford impression is growing on me. Keep up the great work, guys. Brian Fuson of Southgate, Michigan, and let me ask you, too. That is the hometown of what former Tigers pitcher and pitching coach? Southgate.
Oh, I thought Southgate is where Steve Avery was from, no? Anyway, let's
Jeff
answer.
Jeff Jones.
One of them.
Okay.
Who?
Jeff Jones.
Jeff Jones. By the way, hold it for a second. We have to say goodbye to our radio audience now.
Yep.
That's WCWA in Toledo and DFN in Detroit. So those people, you people, and you want to listen to the rest of the podcast, you know how to find it. This has been, for you, the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay. Go ahead, back to the mailbag.
One more. Now, let's go right back to the old hometown of Grosse Pointe. And this is from an attorney Eli and I both happen to know, Norbert Madison, otherwise known as Norb Madison. Hi, guys. Just to make you feel better about the responses you get via all your email, you all suck. Seriously, I've been a listener since sitting down with Eli in Detroit in March, going over baseball records, and goes through a lot of stuff here about Rogers Hornsby. Says, you know, Rogers Hornsby could be the greatest player of all time. He could be the so-called GOAT, but I never heard Hornsby was great defensively. Denny, you saw him play. You pitched against him. What do you think?
Roger Hornsby, I saw him play. Huh?
I think he was he in the 20s or the 30s? I think it was the 20s.
20s, 20s, 30s.
And he played 1915 to 1937.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's 22 years. Anyway, as a kid, reading all the baseball history I did, he had the highest batting average of all time, 424.
Right. Yep.
There was a couple. I think Harry Heilman hit 420. So there are a lot of others in the 400s. Not a lot of others, maybe half a dozen. Ted Williams, of course, the last. But that's why I thought Hornsby was remarkable. I think he had 400. He said how many times?
Underrated.
Three times, yeah.
Underrated.
But again, I don't know if he could field or not.
Yeah.
He was a third baseman. But
well, when you hit 424, you don't have to.
So that's.
And I just want to add one more thing from the mailbag, because you guys will want to comment on this. We discussed this last time regarding Tiger and Phil and what the future held for them.
Yeah.
Would Tiger at least go on the seniors tour? Regular listener Sean Gardner says that he thinks it's a great idea that Tiger could actually create longevity by joining the seniors tour. He cares only about the majors, so why not play the seniors tour and play an occasional, you know, competitive atmosphere? But then, back to Grosse Pointe Charles, he says also that he does not think it would behoove them to play on the seniors tour, both of them, and he doesn't think they will because they got way too much money already.
And the guy mentions that he can ride in a cart to save his back. It's not the cart that'll save his back. It's the swing that creates the back.
Not only that, but they're both going to play on the tour. They may not be playing 50 weeks a year, but they're going to play a lot on the tour. You know why? Because the tour is going to come out and get him and say, listen, you owe us something. We want you on the scene. Seniors
Tour.
Yeah,
for sure. They will.
You got to come out and help us draw more
They'll
people.
They'll at least play in the big championships. I agree.
Because the population that's going to the Senior Tour is a lot less than it used to be when Nicklaus and Palmer and all those guys were on the tour. Yeah. Now they need a spark.
Yeah, yeah,
and
they do.
And Tiger's going to be it.
The Scott McCarrans of the world and, yep. and are not really, right. you know. Okay. You want to do some football, Bob?
Yeah, we can. I want to bring up one other thing about baseball, though, and I want to ask Brandon about this, okay? Because he is our link to the modern world. I saw a feature on Lance Lynn the other day. He's having a tremendous year, one of the top pitchers in baseball. And in this feature, the reporter wrote that Lance Lynn leads all American League starters in WARP, W-A-R-P, and F4, small f, WAR, and he trails only his teammate, Mike Minor, in B WAR, small b, capital WAR.
What the hell is that?
He leads all qualified AL starters in DRA minus. And despite not being a strikeout pitcher by reputation, he's ninth in the league in K percentage. He is also, Lynn is, ninth in the American League in ERA minus. What the hell does all that mean, Brandon?
I know what WAR means, but I don't know.
Brandon,
B WAR, F WAR, G WAR. What the heck,
Brandon? You got any idea?
I think that the F WAR has to do with fan graphs. The B WAR, Baseball Reference, possibly.
What are fan graphs?
It's analytics, basically.
Fan though, oh, for strikeouts meaning fan.
Yeah, these are just deep analytics, and a lot of people use them. Especially see them in the fantasy world because I don't know they tend to use these stats as a barometer of how the pitcher compares to another pitcher.
In other words, this is a long-winded explanation for saying you got no clue what this stuff means either.
Well, you know what? So on some stats that we all kind of understand.
Yeah, like batting average, home runs.
That's what
RBIs.
I was going to say. One of the reasons the Astros were 5-1 favorites, which is kind of ridiculous, is the Tigers. By the way, they're 40 games better than the Tigers, or 43 games better than the Tigers. They're 81-47. Tigers 38-86. But the Tigers are last in batting in the AL. With a 681 OPS, that's on base plus per slugging. And the average is 763, almost a full 100 points better. They're last in home runs. They're last in runs. Next 447, next lowest 528. Lowest in RBI, 422, no one else under 500. So their offensive stats are just awful. They got two homers last night, though, and got some good pitches.
And listen, one other thing. We missed the star of the night there. Who threw out the first pitch last night?
I don't know who threw out the first pitch.
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
Oh, that's a professional wrestler, right?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Former professional wrestler.
I really don't follow that. And, Brandon, I got one other thing to add about what you were discussing a moment ago. Son, I got a lot of fantasies, but not one of them have to do with sports, I'll tell you that much.
Hey, you should try it out. It's pretty fun.
All right, fine. Let's go to football. We have been beating the hell out of former Central Michigan wide receiver Antonio Brown with his helmet nonsense, while saying at the same time that Odell Beckham Jr., whom the Giants just traded to Cleveland, is as big a head case as Brown is. But now here comes that old boy from Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield. And he don't like none of this stuff neither no more. And old Baker done told GQ an article just the other day, I cannot believe the New York Giants drafted Daniel Jones. Blows my mind. But there is more. OBJ said on Tuesday he believed the Giants traded him to the Cleveland Browns this season in a deliberate effort to hurt his career. He told Sports Illustrated, quote, this wasn't no business move. This was personal.
Oh,
they thought
so
they'd
ridiculous.
Send me here to that. This is unbelievable.
So ridiculous. Especially when earlier he had said that he's the Giants brand. He created the Giants brand.
Yes, he created
it.
Right.
As if it isn't 100 years older than
yeah.
him.
By the way, Mayfield came out and said, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean it that way.
Mayfield kind of walked it back a little bit. He said,
yeah,
that,
he did. Yeah, tried said, to, anyway.
Yeah. Right. You know, one other thing, too. Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown were pretty close to each other at one time. And even Le'Veon Bell is ripping.
Le'Veon.
Well, you pronounce it your way. I'll pronounce it
my way.
That's fine.
Go ahead.
I pronounce it the correct
I
way. You pronounce
three
it
words
way.
In a row.
Why don't you give us another epistle with
Brown,
him?
Brown, epistle. You know what? I'm taking you to church Sunday with me, okay? Antonio Brown, he should find a better way to spend this time. He says, I understand where he's coming from, but at the same time, it's a rule. So why don't you follow the rules and get on with your life? Him fighting for it, him not showing up for practice, I really don't agree with it. And Gruden, I think, is he's even popping off about it. So.
No. They all realize that they need Brown. They've made an
investment in Brown. The helmet is certified. He's going to wear it sooner or later.
In fact, there's a conspiracy theory in one of our mailbag letters that it was all done to help promote Hard Knocks and get the viewership up and all that.
What do you two guys think about this? There was an article that cleared on Bleacher Report the other day with the headline, "This drama and his behavior could cost Antonio Brown the Hall of Fame someday."
Possibly.
We just talked about it before the show started, and I said, isn't it a little bit early to be talking about the Hall of Fame?
Well, he's been in the league 8, 9, 10 years, so I think he's got the credentials already. But, you know—
But he hasn't played since 19.
Some of these are these wide 18. Receivers a little wacky? Is it like left-handers, they say, in baseball? Terrell Owens, lunatic.
No. You know, you run across the middle.
Beckham, lunatic.
Listen to me. You run across the middle often enough and get whacked often enough, you got to go nuts.
Maybe.
Was it Joe Horn who hid the ballpoint pen down in New Orleans and pulled it off the signed football?
Yes,
yeah. I mean, you go on and on with this stuff.
I know, yeah.
I got a lot of other stuff.
He seems to have his helmet,
Rudy,
though.
Do we have him on the phone?
Go ahead.
No, I said I got a lot of other stuff. You want to get to Rudy? What do you want
to do? Yeah, it's about time to get to Rudy, isn't it, folks?
Okay, let's
take a moment.
Cease this for a moment.
Yep.
And let's call up Rudy and let's talk to Rudy.
Chasing a stupid dream causes nothing but you and everyone around you heartache.
Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to go to school here. And ever since I was a kid, everybody said it couldn't be done. I always listened to them, believe what they said. I don't want to do that anymore.
That was Ned Beatty, who played the father of Rudy in the movie Rudy. That was Sean Astin, who played Rudy in the movie Rudy. A great underdog movie. There have been so many wonderful ones in sports, from Miracle on Ice to Rocky to The Greatest Game, Cinderella Man, on they go. It's a very popular sports theme, and this one really struck a chord with audiences about 25 years ago. And joining us now is Rudy Rudiger, who's really made a career out of his incredible effort to get into Notre Dame and become a ball player. Thanks for joining us, Rudy.
No, it's an honor for sure, and being on with Mr. McLean is really awesome.
Well, thank you very much, Rudy. You read that exactly the way you were supposed to, Rudy.
Rudy, we're on with him all the time, pal, and it ain't no big deal.
That's right. You know, Rudy, I saw one of your motivational speeches you made to a school in Utah, and you mentioned how hard it was, how many years, I think it was 10 years, to get the movie done. What was harder, going through what you had to go through to be on the scout team at Notre Dame and finally get into a game, or getting that movie made? Were they both equally difficult and took this great persistence that you talk about all the time?
I think making the movie, because you're always second-guessing yourself because of what people would say about how a movie should be made, or how hard a movie is to get made, or why a movie shouldn't be made. You go back to Notre Dame, I always believed I could go there. So that was a different struggle, of course. But this was a true struggle of anticipation, the struggle of second-guessing, struggle of having people believe in you. It was really hard. But one thing that kept you going was the message of how I got to Notre Dame, the feeling. So I always fought. I think even professional people are in a situation, especially ball players, they have that feeling. And they believe in that feeling, and they go for that feeling. And that's a hard thing to explain to people.
Sure.
It's something inside you that you have. It's a good feeling to have.
Where did the romance with you come for Notre Dame? How did that all develop?
Well, you know, you grow up in Chicago, you know, blue-collar Catholic. So all you heard about was Notre Dame, and if you go to Notre Dame, you might be able to have a shot to go to heaven. Who wouldn't want to go to heaven, right? So that was kind of like how we believe. But, you know, then they say it's for special kids, special athletes, smart kids. I'm going, whoa, that means I can't go to heaven. And really, that's how we grew up, because my parents were very structured, conservative Catholic, and we believed in everything people would say to us. And whatever coach said to you, believe. Whatever teacher said to you, believe. Unfortunately, I had some bad teachers, some bad coaches, and I believed in those dudes. So one day I woke up, said to myself, these guys haven't really accomplished anything. So why would I believe in them?
Great point.
That, You know, so.
That's hard for a kid to do. Hey, but from 1975, when you graduated and played, mm-hmm. till the movie came out in 93, what did you do in those 18 years? How did you make a living? It couldn't have all been in pursuit of the movie. So what would you have done with your life, and what would you be doing now hadn't you succeeded in getting your story out there?
Well, I'm going to explain it this way. I never had no second shot, no second. It was no option for me. Once I knew what I wanted, I sold insurance, of course. Mm-hmm. But that insurance taught me how to do certain things mentally. It taught me a lot of structure, a lot of discipline, how to take a no, how to pursue the no, and go for the yes. Mm-hmm. And that was important. That was an important process that I needed to go through. And after Notre Dame, when I graduated from Notre Dame, of course, I had no idea what to do. Most kids don't know what to do when they graduate from college, and that's a fact. So you just pick something and you think, oh, maybe I'll make money here. And you find out making money doesn't make you happy. It's pursuing your dream that makes you happy. And that's the hard part, because sometimes when you pursue the dream, there's no money there.
Yeah, that's right.
Heartache and pain. It's like when I went to the military, I was in the Navy before Notre Dame. After high school, I went to work in a factory, and the Vietnam War was happening. So instead of getting drafted, I joined. And when I joined, I realized that there's another world out there. And the military actually gave me the confidence to believe in Rudy. The Rudy came out of me in the military.
Hey, Rudy, Bob Page here. Let's talk about Notre Dame football a little bit, because as I say, we don't do that enough on this particular program. So I want to right away test your knowledge of Notre Dame football.
Oh, wow.
Sure.
Wow. Good boy.
What is the megaphone trophy?
I have no idea.
The megaphone trophy was introduced jointly by the alumni clubs of Notre Dame and Michigan State to be presented to the winner of the annual game. You guys lead the series 33-27-1. State, though, is 11-9 over the last 20 years. God, the game of the century when Era tied one for the Gipper.
Oh, yeah,
MSU planting its flag on the field at South Bend after kicking Notre Dame's asses again. Why are you chickening out of this rivalry? Why did Notre Dame refuse to play Michigan State until 2026?
That's Notre Dame for you.
I tell you, the 10-10 tie, though, man, do I remember that 10-10 tie in 66. What's your next one?
That
10-10 tie was very significant for this movie to be made. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. There was a running back by the name of Bob Glashaw that caught the ball that tied
the
game.
Harpo, they called him. Harpo.
Right. Harpo. I was pursuing the feeling that was given in the locker room at Notre Dame after the game, that this only happens in Hollywood, from a sports writer, he just planted a seed. But when I saw the movie Rocky, it grew. Then I went back to South Bend, planted myself with the company to be a district manager for 26 car dealerships. We would do the insurance and the sales. But here's my point. There was Lou Holtz came, and Bob Glashaw walked on that field as a graduate assistant, and I always wanted to meet Bob Glashaw. So I walked over there, introduced myself, and offered him he could stay in my condominium if he doesn't have a place to stay, because I need someone to watch over my condominium I just bought. And he accepted it. Make a long story short, I wrote a short screenplay about my life, and he started to read it, and his buddy Ron Ducey came over that played with him as a fullback. They said, wow, you should read this. And they said, no, I think our friend Jason Miller should read this, who is a Pulitzer Prize writer, big Notre Dame fanatic. He played in The Exorcist, the priest. I'll make a long story. That was the start of introducing the movie to the professional.
I
introduced it to Jason, but Jason never went forward with it. And there's a story to that story to the story, but the long short of it is, I committed to Jason. He would play Eric Parsegian in the movie when I get it made. We shook hands on it, and he was so excited that we would think of him, because I told him the movie in Scranton, Pennsylvania, at a bar, on a bar stool. And that bar stool, I told him, and that same bar, that's where he passed away,
oh.
at that same bar. So the whole thing
that story
is,
must have shocked him, I guess, if he passed away on the spot, Rudy. And you did make a long story even longer, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but here's the point.
Oh, now's the point.
The point is, he believed in it and he died in his belief.
By the way, Bob, as a Spartan, who scored the only Michigan State touchdown in that 10-10 tie?
Bob Apisa, maybe?
No, he's a tailback, Regis Cavender, and did a story.
And by the way, I want to tell you, I didn't see that game. You know why? Because I was a Michigan fan. I didn't care Michigan State's playing Notre Dame.
He's got more answers for more things than anybody I've ever. He doesn't know an answer right away, it's like, you know.
So do you follow? I mean, do you still follow the team's fortunes? Do you have a good feeling about them this year? They seem to be ranked in the top 10 by everybody.
Yeah, Brian Kelly, I think has become very humbled in the Notre Dame culture. It's hard to understand the Notre Dame culture if you haven't ever been around it. It takes about 8-10 years understanding, and I think he understands it now. So I think he's going to do well this year because he's recruiting that kid that believes in Notre Dame, that wants to be at Notre Dame. And that's the difference. You just can't recruit a kid because he has talent. You have to recruit a kid that has talent and belief. And sometimes you get that secondary kid that doesn't have quite the talent but believes but goes to that next level. And I could go on and on with those type of kids that played at Notre Dame that were like that.
Rudy, the former Grand Valley and Central Michigan head coach had reason to be humble after you guys went 4-8 just a couple of years ago. So now you go 12-1 last year. Tell us about Ian Book, who came in replacing Brandon Wimbush after four seasons. Right. This guy had a QB rating last year at Notre Dame of 154.
No kidding.
And the only game they lost was in the Cotton Bowl to the professional football team known as Clemson.
Well, you know, let's go back to that moment. I think Ian Book was never in that big of a platform. This is a big platform, and I think because I think he's matured in that platform. Sometimes when you see that feeling and see that type of platform, you're not quite sure whether you belong there or not. And I think that he learned from that. So this is a different Ian Book, of course. And sometimes you got to go through that moment in order to appreciate that platform is just like any other game. And I think it shook him up a little. And that's what I saw in him. And as a quarterback, he wasn't quite sure he belonged there yet. So there you go.
Rudy, I got two quick questions, the most important questions anyone will ask you today. Number one, did they give you your own trailer and did they provide starlets?
Starlets?
You mean harlots? Or you mean harlots, Denny? Or
starlets?
Hey, there's a big commercial coming up on national commercial. Sean Astin and I did.
No kidding,
I can't tell you. I play Ned Beatty in the deal, and he plays Rudy. He gets a new dream. It's really good. I can't tell you yet because it's going to be a surprise. It comes out during football season. So watch out for it. It's really, really good.
Can you tell us the product?
No, I can't.
It's interesting because this is the 25th year. It's interesting. The movie came out in 94.
Yeah.
This is
25th. Well, Rudy, let me ask you this. If we keep our mouths shut, will you give us a piece of the action?
No.
I don't think.
Was there any part of the movie, you were disappointed in?
You know, I wanted to show a little more of why I went to Notre Dame, the Navy, and we had to cut that out. Because we just didn't think it was important for the message at that time. We wanted more victories. That was a big factor. And also the boxing at Notre Dame, what it showed you more reality, how the student body supported me instead of the football team. But we went to the football team instead of the student body because the student body supported me because I was a boxer. It's a big thing at Notre Dame, the Bengal bout, and I became a champion there. But I earned that respect from the student body through being on the Notre Dame student government and being part of that. And also I earned the respect of the football team by beating football players in the Bengal bout. So the boxing, we had to cut out. But, again, we had to decide how many victories you want here.
Yeah, you didn't want a five-hour movie.
Right. The writer was brilliant. Angelo Pizzo was brilliant how he developed the composites and the embellishments of characters and of the journey. And I was real happy with the message. I wasn't so much caught up whether this happened or not. I was more caught up that the message worked. Of having a dream and not quitting.
It's funny. I watched one of your motivational speeches. I said a little earlier you gave to some school in Utah, and you basically said, you know, set a goal, which is mm-hmm. what we all need to do. And you set a simple. You have two simple goals. You want to go to Notre Dame, and your second mm-hmm. goal was to make a movie. Those are pretty simple goals. When you set a goal, you can pretty much figure out the steps you need to get there. I was surprised you didn't mention Lou Holtz because he was a famous Notre Dame guy, and in his motivational speech, he once said, "Don't listen," like you said, "Don't listen to the garbage. Don't listen to the naysayers." Because Lou said, 80% of the people don't care, and the other 20% want you to fail. And that's kind of exactly what happened to you from your father on down. Don't try it. You're going to fail. And other than you wanting to do it, nobody else would care about it but you. So
let me say it this way. I'm glad the naysayers were there. I needed them.
Sure.
To empower me, to give me the edge. You know, you can't walk through life saying, "Hey, where to go, Rudy? You're awesome." That doesn't give you the edge. What gives you the edge is someone saying, "Hey, dude, you don't belong here." And you know inside you do belong here. That's the edge. And I think that Mr. McClain would agree with that as a pitcher and what he went through. That's the big part. You know, all this motivational stuff, I don't get it. 80% of the people, 20%. I don't get that because I just go through life and look at it like, okay, this is what I want. This is what I must do. Now, here's what I have to do. You say, "I can't do it." That's okay. I'll just work a little harder and outwork you. That's it. Well, and wherever my talent takes me, it takes me. But, that other stuff, it just confuses me. That's all.
Well, most people get knocked off their perch a lot easier than that. Some people can have a good idea. One person tells mm-hmm. them it isn't good, and they believe it because there's the basic insecurity of human beings you were able to overcome. The other thing,
I think that he surrounded himself once he got through all the minutia, right? I mean, he surrounded right. himself mm-hmm. with a good structure and good people. Because I know the guy that represents you, Costello. He's a hell of a guy. He does a hell of a job for you.
Rudy, anything you need mm-hmm. to promote before we let you go? Your foundation?
Let's promote. I'm glad we got a Rise Up with Rudy podcast that's coming up launching it on the 26th. One. And two, we got Rudy in concert around the country with our 80-piece orchestra.
Really? What are you going to do?
What the hell are you
doing?
Wait
a minute. What are you doing?
What's the concert?
Wait a second. I play piano organ. What are we going to do together?
The Philharmonic Orchestra comes in and they score the movie as people watch it. It's really cool.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And also, too, we have... on Amazon Prime, we have Rudy Rudiger, The Walk-On, the documentary. Watch it. Then we have Dream Big on Broadway, Rudy Rudiger on Broadway. Watch that.
You are an industry.
Yes,
and he played 27 seconds at the end of a game that was already over. How'd you do it, man?
Rudy, I only got two things to say to you in closing. First of all, on behalf of my buddies, we really appreciate you coming on the show today. And secondly, Rudy, no way in hell are you winning at Michigan or at Georgia this year. So get over it.
How about Stanford? Okay.
Bob, sit back, have another hit, will you please?
Rudy, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Awesome. And anything you guys need, let me know. RudyInternational.com.
Rudy, we really what is it now, Rudy?
RudyInternational.com.
RudyInternational.com or R45.com.
Rudy, I got to tell you something. When we talked that first time about a year ago, I'm telling you, I was impressed then with all the things that were going on. I didn't believe half of them, and yet now I believe everything you said.
Hey, Mr. McClain, I have to call you Mr. McClain. Just like I just golfed at the Joe Torre golf tournament, right?
Yeah.
And what a great human being he is.
Oh, yeah.
When I met him one-on-one, eye-to-eye, we both got emotional and we embraced each other.
That's great.
He is a true human being, I got to tell you. And that was quite an honor to do that. And I'm honored to be around the great ones like you. And we all been through our struggles and our difficulties, but we rise above from our challenges and our difficulties. So Thanks for having me.
Well
Rudy,
said.
Thank you very much. You have a great day. I'll see you on the circuit.
You got it.
Thanks, bud. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Couple things.
What a classic that guy is.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, the guy who represents him, this guy Costello, has really done a job for him. The other thing, there's two things he brought up, the boxing and when people say you're not going to make it, two things. One, boxing, I went to Mount Carmel High School, big Catholic school, and had a great big monster relationship with Notre Dame. I was offered the first baseball scholarship to Notre Dame, and of course, I was like a fool. I decided to take the $17,500 mm-hmm. from the White Sox, so I never got a chance to go to Notre Dame. That was number one. Number two, Al Lopez is the one that told me on an airplane coming back from Mexico City that I would never play in the big leagues because I had no breaking ball, and he didn't think I'd ever develop one because I'd never done anything with a breaking ball before in my life. He proved what he said today on the radio. Somebody gives you the inspiration, a negative inspiration, to go ahead and do it anyway. And that's what Lopez did to me. He made me better.
I was thinking
about...
Ladies
and gentlemen, Al Lopez, for you younger people, Brandon has no idea what you're talking about. Al Lopez was a longtime manager in the big leagues. They called him El Senor, and he won the 1959, or is in the 59
World
Series.
Well, they called him, Bob, they actually called him the professor.
Yeah.
Underdog stories are great. We mentioned all the movies beforehand. Yeah. Let me tell you one of the reasons I was poo-pooing Rudy in the beginning, because he really never accomplished anything in terms of winning anything. He didn't win a champion. I mean, at least Rocky fought for the title. That was a fictional story. So maybe you remember this guy, but early on when I was a young reporter, the Tigers had a minor leaguer named Mark DeJohn. All right. He was a 23rd round draft
pick. I remember him. Little shortstop.
Yeah. Okay. He made the Tigers finally. In 82 at age 29, he had been 7 years with the Mets and another three more in the minor leagues with the Tigers. He'd been in the minor leagues 11 or a total of 13 years in the minor leagues. He finally gets up, makes the team, plays in, lasts for 2 months, plays in 24 games. And so then he got cut again. And he got cut, and I did a story with him because I thought he was a great story. All he wanted to do was play in the big leagues. He said, you know, I played 24 games in the big leagues. I got up 28 times, and I fulfilled my dream. I can die now, basically. And so sometimes it can be a very small goal,
yes,
like just going to Notre Dame, that can motivate you. And like Mark DeJohn, who, by the way, has been in the minors as a coach and everything for many organizations since. But
let me ask you a question, and you too, Mr. New York.
My name is Bob. I'm on the show too.
Bob, Booby, Mr. New Booby. York. Booby. Booby, Booby, Booby.
Stop calling me that.
Okay, what?
You are kind of a booby.
What?
Wouldn't you have liked to play in the major leagues?
Of course.
My point being this. There is no better life in the world if you
But he only had it for 24 days and he busted his ass for 13 years.
But he got where he wanted to try to get.
Okay.
He got there. That's all I'm saying.
Good, good. Anyway,
I totally agree.
Bob,
every red-blooded young American boy grew up in our era wanting one thing.
Absolutely.
To play in the major leagues.
I agree.
Anyway, Rudy is a great American story.
It is.
Small town, not really bright, no knock. We're not really average high school football player. Couldn't qualify for a major school, had to go to junior college, got his ass kicked for 4 years in the practice team. He played 27 meaningless seconds. He managed to convince people to make a movie that's just another cliche sports movie. And he's a multimillionaire only in America. Hats off to him.
That's what it's all about, right? Only in America. You too, Bob.
Yeah, I think you owe royalties now to Jay Black and the Americans over that.
Only in America.
Only in America.
Only in America.
Can we end this show now, please?
Yes, please. So long, everybody.
So long, everybody. Have a great weekend. And we're wait a minute. We're going to be in. Come on now, hang on a second. This weekend,
Lansing?
I'm going to be in Lansing, Michigan, with Daryl Evans. Where he's going to be there all day Saturday, possibly Sunday, but all day Saturday he's going to be there signing autographs and doing other crazy things. And then Sunday we're going to be there, and then Monday we're going to be in Grand Rapids at the ballpark. So if you get a chance, come on out to Grand Rapids too.
Here's your assignment.
Yes, sir.
We should get Lance on the show. I don't have Lance's cell number.
I'm going to do that.
Go way, way back with Lance. So you get Lance's number when you're in Grand Rapids. And let's get Daryl on next Thursday. A lot to talk about with him. The home runs. He's the only guy that hit 40 home runs in both leagues.
Yes, both leagues.
He was also also, I believe he was
the
on
oldest
base.
Oldest player ever to hit over 40
oldest,
home runs.
Oldest right. player to
I
hit
believe
40
he
home
was
runs.
On base when Hank Aaron hit 715.
He was indeed. He was on second base.
Yeah, and so he was the first to green him at home plate.
Yes.
That's and amazing. So, yeah. And I said what I did just now because that was his nickname.
Yeah.
Howdy Doody.
Yeah. And he at a young age,
he looked just like
Howdy Doody. He really did. In fact, if you put that little mark on his nose, he'd look just like him.
Didn't we end the show 5 minutes? Are we
no,
still on?
No, we're
okay.
still on.
Okay,
come
now
on.
We're
come
off.
On.
So long,
10 minutes ago. No? Okay. Once again, have a great weekend, everybody. Yeah, bye-bye.
Let's cut the show off in an hour.
Have a good one.